With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hello and welcome to the Curzon Film Podcast. In this episode, we are looking at a class study in Hungary with Sunset and being hungry to study in class with Booksmart. Plus, Beanie Feldstein and Caitlin Deaver chat to us about their latest film. I'm Jake Cunningham, and joining my class of conversation for this week, from the very top of the class, we have Kelly Powell and returning special guest, Anna Murray.
Hello.
Hi.
And sat at the back, but still maybe getting a sticker for showing up, it's Sam Howlett.
Hello.
How are you doing?
Good.
Yeah. Present.
Present. Nice. Yeah. Nice. Very good. Before we get to Booksmart, which is already being touted as one of the best new releases of 2019 so far, we will first take a quite beautiful sun-drenched sojourn to Budapest, at least for the first hour or so, as we talk about Sunset, which is the new film from the director of the Oscar-winning Son of Saul. Sam, can you tell us a little bit more about this film?
I certainly can. So as you said, this is Laszlo Nemes' follow-up to his Oscar-winning Son of Saul. This time we are set in the early 1900s in Budapest, where our lead Iris returns to work as a milliner, a hat maker at her parents' prestigious hat making company. But while there, she finds out she had a brother, and the rest of the film, you follow her along as she figures out the mystery of this mysterious brother, while in the background a sort of growing violent threat looms.
Yeah, it's a big film.
It's a very big film.
Coming off the back of Son of Saul, he's made a 2.5 hour long, pretty slow Hungarian drama, a lot of the time about hats as well. So perhaps to some that may be a tough sell.
Perhaps.
But perhaps. Obviously not to us. Obviously we jumped to this straight away because it's from the director of Son of Saul. Ayana, how do you think that coming off the back of a film like that, Son of Saul obviously grappling with the Holocaust, it's Nemes' first film as well. Where do you go from there? What does that film do? What do you take with it onto your next one? What do you leave behind?
It's kind of hard to jump off of Son of Saul because it's so ambitious and dark and it grapples with these really like tough themes. But I think with Sunset, he's gone even bigger and more sprawling than Son of Saul. We're like, I guess Son of Saul is quite contained, even though it's, you know, tough tackling with these things. There is a grander scope to Sunset, and I think it works in his favor, really.
Yeah, I think part of what Son of Saul got sold on was this idea of claustrophobia and tightness of frame and point of view, and he does let himself loose a bit. I mean, there's a lot of that same style of cinematography, that kind of spectral floating feeling as we follow Iris, whether that's through a department store or through a battle zone. And we can see that mimicry, that he's got this way of approaching framing that he likes. But I think this was his opportunity to do something more classical. It feels like it's drawing stuff from Barry Lyndon at times mixed with Jason Bourne.
It's a nice comparison with Son of Saul, technically. So they both have this very shallow focus and they're following around a central character who's in every scene, every shot, every frame of the film. And with Son of Saul, the camera was following Saul around a concentration camp, and the horrors of the concentration camp were sort of blurred out in the background. I guess the point was that if you're going to depict the Holocaust on screen, you shouldn't revel in it. You shouldn't show it in too much detail. It should be in the background, this sort of chaotic thing on the horizon.
Well, I think what he's concerned with is perspective,
yeah,
and subjectivity. And definitely he's interested in exploring, I think, the human experience through cinema in a very interesting way. I mean, at times it's a bit much, like you get into the world of, it does submerge you.
Mm.
You know, you're immersed in this world that Iris is sort of navigating, and we as the viewer go along with her. You know, we don't know, we're discovering things as she is. But at times it is kind of like, oh, just like, I want to see what's happening.
Yeah.
But I think that's on purpose. And he talks a lot about like layering the world. And you kind of have to use your imagination, because there are things happening in the background that you don't focus on, but they're there, you know?
Yeah. And whilst in Son of Saul, the way that it's composed in a way protects us as viewers from the horrors at the edge of frame. I occasionally felt, because this is so beautifully executed as a piece of production design as well, that I thought, what am I missing by the camera not being wider, by just stepping back a bit? What, like,
just adjust the focus a little bit, so you can, like, see the
what set has been built.
Yeah,
because
it's vast. It's must have been an incredible set.
Yeah,
there's such like an intense subjectivity to it. Like, there's this scene where there's like a massive parade, and I feel like if it was another movie, that would be like the main feature of the film, but in Sunset the parade's just an afterthought, and you're just stuck with Iris's perspective.
Yeah.
So
well, in a way it feels like this could have been a street level film happening during a similar event to like that of Les Mis or something. That is obviously quite operatic and grand and huge,
yeah,
and you see all of that, whereas this is that
that's just in the background.
Yeah
And literally in the background. You can't really see it.
But when you do get those moments where the film does just give you some reprieve from the darkness and like the weight of the investigation that Iris has, and literally this can just be a window opening, but in those moments it feels like a breath of fresh air, and it is and a window opens and you see natural light come through. It's quite a dark film even during the day. You almost think it's nighttime because so much of it happens inside, and so for the first half an hour it's all pretty much like that. And then she goes into a park to meet like most of the people that are celebrating the 30 years of this hat company. And I'm not normally a sucker for this period stuff kind of thing, but maybe because it was so subjective, because it was so tight, when the film opened up like that, and I was just thinking, God, those hats, they do look good. But then obviously the dresses and the setting, and it's shot on 35mm, and it looks incredible. And for those moments, I can totally see why this film was taken on a 35mm tour around the country to get people to see as much as they can in this way. If you are interested, there are actually maybe a few dates available for that tour at the time of when you're listening. So do try and get to that if you can. Going back to that celluloid feeling, I quite liked that this didn't have that cine bro-y Nolan feeling to shooting on film.
It doesn't like brag about it.
Yeah.
Yeah,
he's, I think he's, I've been listening to a lot of his interviews, but he's very concerned with the texture of film and what that means for an audience and the audience's experience with that. And yeah, it's not for any kind of flashy purposes. It's he wants to get back to that feeling, you know, and the way that it's shot, the way that we navigate the world, it does kind of feel like you are exploring, you know, turn of the century, you know, Hungary, Budapest, at the almost end of the Austro-Hungarian Empire, and you don't know what is on the horizon, you know. And I think film lends itself to that immersive feeling.
I would say I think the film is at its best in its first half, when it's all setting up, when it's putting its players on the board and you're not quite sure how they're all going to come together. And then there's this quite impressive central conflict right at the middle of the film that happens at a countess's house. And that's where you finally kind of have the reveal of the revolutionaries, I suppose, would be called gang, and the middle and upper class that they're against. And after that, it becomes a bit more Final Act of Les Mis, I suppose. but prior to that, I love this kind of quiet, subdued family drama, mystery, noir feeling at times.
I think this is a far more plot-driven film than Son of Saul. Son of Saul, funnily, both films are about a central character looking for a family member. Whereas Son of Saul, it's more of a vague idea of him looking for his son, to the point where you're not even sure if there really is a son. Yeah. It's more of a conceptual search, whereas this is very much, where is my brother? Who is my brother? What's the mystery? And it's very, very, it's more plot-driven than I expected this kind of film to be. And there is perhaps a bit too many times where she asks a question, is given a vague answer, wanders off, someone asks her where she's going, is asked to go back. That happens quite a lot. It's a bit repetitive in that sense.
It could do with
that
rom-com trope of just like, if we just had a chat for 5 minutes,
clean everything up.
Yeah. We could trim this down to a tight 70.
But I think that works in the way that it aligns you with her, that you're discovering things as she is.
Yeah. All right. So that is Sunset. Perhaps one for fans of Son of Saul, definitely, who wanted to check out what the director does next. But in terms of scale and feel, it's almost Dickensian at times. So maybe one for the Great Expectations fans out there. But in a way, you could even slip this into your Downton Abbey group.
I don't believe you could. It's a period drama. Yeah. It's a costume period drama, and it doesn't pretend it's not.
Yeah, and I can't overstate how good the hats look. Now it is time for us to move from a 2.5 hour long Hungarian pre-war drama film onto a 2019 teen comedy, which is a struggle for any conversational segue. But as the sun sets on our first discussion, we must turn a page onto a new book. Smart. All right. So Booksmart is about Amy and Molly. They're played by Caitlin Dever and Beanie Feldstein. Their high school plan was to study hard, don't slack off, get into a good college. That's until they discover that their hard partying classmates are also bound for the Ivy League as well. So putting aside their ring binders, they commit to spending the last night of high school experiencing the debauched life they so precariously avoided. This is actor Olivia Wilde's directorial debut that rewrites and celebrates the cliches of the teen movie. Iona, you were lucky enough to talk to Beanie and Caitlin about this, which we'll play in just a second. But you could just give us a quick background on Booksmart and the team involved.
Yeah, like you said, this is the directorial debut of Olivia Wilde. You might know her as an actress first. She was in movies like Her and Drinking Buddies. So for her first feature as a director, she's gone and played around with the teen movie. The Booksmart stars Beanie Feldstein and Caitlin Dever. They're both kind of up-and-coming actresses. Beanie Feldstein, you'll probably know her from Lady Bird, and Caitlin Dever, she's been in a couple of movies. Last year she was in The Front Runner and Beautiful Boy, but this is their first leading role for both of them. So I talked to them about the challenges and the exciting aspects of that, and also kind of what's the fun in playing women who are both smart and funny. Caitlin Dever, Beanie Feldstein, welcome to the Curzon Film Podcast. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having us.
So I'd just like to jump straight into talking about your characters. What I love about Molly and Amy is that, you know, they're smart and driven and ambitious, but they're also extremely funny. And usually those concepts are kind of mutually exclusive. So was that a fun thing for you in terms of taking these genre tropes and character tropes and playing around with them?
Yeah.
I mean, for me, when I first read the script, I read this script about 4 years ago, and immediately fell in love with the idea of getting to lead a comedy as a young woman with Beanie here. I think it's sad, but it's so rare. Scripts like this don't come around that often. A script that's this good and also the fact that it was a comedy and about a strong female friendship, yeah. and that, you know, I was going to get to play a queer character where there's no coming out scene. That was a huge deal to me, too.
Yeah. I think not only are smart women not given the space to be funny, but they're also not given the space to be, like, gross and silly and weird and wacky, in addition to, like, driven and type A and motivated. And so what I love so much about Molly and her love for Amy is that you get to see this girl who is very different at school, where she has sort of this armor on and is very curt and short with people and doesn't give them the space to get to know her, versus when she's alone with Amy, you see how, like, wacky and kind of gross and silly she is. And that's so true of so many women I know. I think the most driven, passionate, talented people I know are also the silliest and the warmest and the most thoughtful and caring. And you're right that those usually are, you're one or the other, especially for yeah. women, especially for young women on screen. So it was so exciting. And also not just one of those characters, but two of them. And they're never competitive with one another. And that was so exciting to us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So this is kind of your first major leading role for both of you.
Yeah.
Was that exciting? Was that terrifying?
It's so exciting. Yeah. It's also terrifying all at once.
I was so honored to be doing it with Caitlin too, because when one of us got scared, the other one was there to booster each other up.
Yeah, it was. I think we had never, the most daunting thing for me, and I think you too, but like looking at a script and like, you're literally on every single page and you're in every single scene and you know, it would require a lot of like memorization and a lot of preparation. That was super daunting, but the fact that Beanie and I both shared equal passion for these two girls and their friendship, and for, we look up to Olivia
so much.
She is literally everything to us. And so the fact that we knew that going in and we were both on equal playing fields, we knew going into it, we were like, okay, whatever we have to do in order to make these two girls shine on screen, we were willing to do it. Yeah. So we lived together during rehearsal and prep and all of the shoot, which was made all the difference, because we were supposed to, you know, have this friendship that these two girls really, really know each other so well. They know each other better than their parents do. So, we just really wanted to nail that and get that down.
It's so interesting because it's like in part the work that you do on screen and in part the work you do off screen. And I learned so much from working with Saoirse Ronan and being the supporting character in her film. And I was so moved by the energy and the love and the care she took for me, and I was so new when I did that movie, that the fact that Caitlin and I were given the opportunity together to maybe be that for someone else was incredibly moving and not something that we took lightly at all.
And then it was kind of cool, the timing worked out pretty crazy, because we led this film together and then we went off.
Did stuff by ourselves where we were leading. And so it was always like, I would always think like, oh, Caitlin would do this in this situation. Or like, I learned that so much from her. So
you take so much with you.
Yeah, it was wonderful.
You've worked with actors who are also directors multiple times throughout both of your careers. What is the kind of difference with your relationship with a director when they are also an actor?
Well, with Olivia specifically, you've worked with more actor turned directors. I feel like I've worked with like a lot of really seasoned like directors, but they've never acted before. And I think Olivia was one of the first. Actually, Lynn Shelton was actually a good example. She's an amazing director. She's so good. But I think when you're an actor, you know, you kind of just have you get to take little pieces. I know at being an actor, I've taken so much from every set that I've been on, but Olivia was able to kind of create the best set possible for an actor, which was really cool. Yeah. And she knew how to make everyone feel comfortable.
Absolutely. I think you get the benefit of not only working with this incredible person who is knowledgeable and collaborative in their own way, but you're also working with everyone they've worked with.
Yeah.
So, like, with Olivia, it was like, oh, we're also working with, you know, little bits of Spike Jonze and Scorsese and Reed Moreno and all these incredible people, and she brought their expertise with her, so that was really special.
Okay. That's all I have time for, so thank you so much.
Nice to meet you.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Thank you, Beanie and Caitlin. So let us delve into Booksmart. I think let's start at the very opening. There is high energy, loud music, dancing, humor. And what do we get in this opening that is telling us we're expecting something new out of this teen comedy genre?
Well, I think it's setting the tone, right, for the rest of the film. It's introducing these characters and their personalities, and it's making use of music in an interesting way, which it does to kinds of overuses in the film, which I'm sure we'll talk about. But yeah, it kind of sets up who these guys are and what their relationship is to each other, and just how they sort of what they're like in this world.
Yeah, something that I really liked about it, because like we know the film is called Booksmart and it's about these girls that are smart and the clever people in their classes, but it starts with, and you realize, oh, they're confident as well. Like they know themselves.
Yeah.
And that was actually just straight away a highlight for me, because that character in pretty much every other teen film will be the nerd.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this film doesn't stereotype, which I really like about it. You know, it doesn't stick to those tropes of the old teen movie that we're all used to. It sort of it plays with that in an interesting way.
Well, you release a teen movie these days, and it's inevitably going to be compared to the films of John Hughes. You can release a Spider-Man film and people are going to compare it to John Hughes. Apparently.
Anything that has a high school in any shot of the film. It's like, oh, it's like a John Hughes movie.
Yeah. and this has no desire to be that.
No, this is so, like, as much as I love the Jump Street films, they are kind of relentlessly referencing other films. And this one has no desire to do that at all. This is very much its own thing. It's not, I don't think there's any reference to another film at all in this film. Like, even like Superbad, and I love Superbad, and this is going to be compared to Superbad a lot. And this very much is the female Superbad in a way, but I think this is even further removed from teen genre than Superbad was, because Superbad, I think, there's a little bit of that in Superbad.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah.
This, I think, is completely its own thing. It's really sincere, really genuine, but also really broadly comedic throughout.
Yeah.
And the comedy is really broad in this film as well, which I really liked. It's not trying to be smarter than it needs to be.
No. And it introduces us to these cliches that you think it's going to deal with, like the school, the jocks, it's the end of term, there's one last party, there's the rich kid, there's the posh one. But actually introduces them only to, like, not necessarily subvert them. Like, it's not trying to be super clever about
like
what
you're
girls.
Expecting. It's not like there's not a voiceover going, oh, okay, these are the jocks. Yeah. These are the, you know, there's none of that. They don't call them that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it does just play around with those characters. Like, the rich one is actually like really funny and is a well-rounded character. Shout out to Skylar Cazondo, who is so good. Oh, like this kid is so funny. He made me cry. There is a scene of him in a car that killed me. And yeah, as much as Beanie and Caitlin are amazing, I would have to say that Skylar Cazondo is the best thing in this film. He's so good. But actually, well, whilst we're on him, let's talk about the supporting cast on here. We've got a whole host of great players. Billy Lord as Gigi, who's kind of just a...
indescribable.
Yes. in a weird way, kind of like... I'll mention The Night Before in a bit, but Michael Shannon's character in that film, of just this mysterious character that just turns up everywhere. Mm. You don't follow whatever night they've had, you know it's wilder than the one that we've seen, but they seem to be following along as well. And she's just a great bit of wild, mad comic relief going throughout the film.
Yeah, I mean, this is the first leading role for both of them, and I think they really like take it in their stride. And what I love about them is that their chemistry is just so natural. And actually, when they were filming the movie, Olivia made them both move in with each other during filming so they could build that relationship. So I think you genuinely get the sense that they are best friends because they do have that vibe that, you know, they do really care and love each other.
And they really do hold their own. They carry this movie. Yeah, and it is, as Ayana said, it's based on the strength of that relationship. And they're super funny and they play off each other in very cool ways.
Mm. And Beanie Feldstein, who is Jonah Hill's sister, I think a lot of people would think that this is kind of stunt casting. You make the female super bad and cast Jonah Hill's sister. But she's my favourite thing in the film.
Yep.
I think there's a scene where she finds out what happens with a certain stuffed panda bear. And her... everything about her performance in that scene is so funny and so well-timed and well-pitched. It's incredible. And she's so good throughout the whole film.
Well, and I think that goes back to making them live together. You get to know each other's rhythms and you get to know each other's tone of voice. And so you're able to bounce off of that as well. Something that like NASA will do when they're putting together a team, that they can figure out even the tone of voice, whether when someone says an alert, what kind of alert it is. Mm. And they're just bouncing off each other so well. Yeah, that their chemistry is amazing. And the film looks really good as well. We recently had Game Night come out, which was actually a big American comedy that looked really good. I recently watched another Netflix comedy that came out in the last few days that just looked flat and bland, and it feels like the technical side of it wasn't part of it. It was just thought it was just, right, let's just film these characters and see what happens. Whereas this feels like it's really been technically thought about. We'll get into the music as well. This feels a total feat of construction from Olivia Wilde.
It's very stylized in a good way. Sometimes it can be a bit much, but yeah, she's definitely thought about the placement of the camera, and using that in the jokes as well. It's very much part of the comedy, which is very, it's a dynamic film. Mm. I enjoyed it a lot.
Well, the DP is a guy called Jason McCormack, who's done a lot of done small features, but a lot of music videos as well. You know the Kanye West video with the blocky lads. Can't remember what it's called. They're like wide boys in a corridor.
Blocky lads, wide boys.
But he did that as well. Okay. But that's because I think I mentioned that because this feels like a music video at times.
Yeah, and I think modern teen comedies often do, but I think this does in a slightly more interesting way than the other ones do.
It made me think of Eighth Grade and how it uses the camera to like heighten a joke, and how, you know, when you're a teenager, everything feels super dramatic, even though it doesn't mean anything in a larger sense. Like, there's a part where Beanie's character finds out that this girl she doesn't think highly of is going to the same Ivy League college as her, and it uses this really extreme dolly zoom. And, you know, it just really, like, heightens everything, all of her feelings, and how, you know, even though it's inconsequential in the long term, right now it's everything.
Yeah. And the music goes a long way in heightening that dynamism that you mentioned, Kelly. it for me goes on too much. There is so many needle drops in this film, and really it's like overwhelming at times. It makes for a killer Spotify playlist.
There's about
for sure.
30 songs in the Spotify playlist.
And like, I'm up for some Lizzo and LCD Sound System, great, but maybe give them some time to breathe. And like, because some of them will last for like 15 seconds and then it's done.
Yeah.
You may leave the film, although it's very good, slightly with a headache.
It's a whirlwind.
Yeah. All right. So that is Booksmart, and that's out this week. And definitely ones we've mentioned a whole host of films there. But for Superbad fans, Lady Bird fans, do go and check that one out for sure. But if you don't fancy heading to the cinema, you can always stay at home, watch something on demand. Sam, can you tell us a little bit about what's on home cinema?
So as well as Sunset, which you can watch on Curzon Home Cinema, we've also got Burning, which we've discussed on the show before and is a lot of people's number one film of the year so far.
Steven Yeun stands, Unite.
Yes.
And Destroyer as well, the Nicole Kidman detective thriller, which was kind of very much underseen at the box office, I think.
Yeah.
Went, you know, a lot of people thought maybe she'll get an Oscar nomination, but it didn't really pick up any steam, any traction, but it is a really good film.
And we have an episode on that as well.
Yeah,
exactly.
And so, in the archives.
Toby Kebbell's in it, definitely not wearing a wig at all.
No, I don't think so.
No. That's his real hair. All right. If you've got any thoughts on Sunset or Booksmart, do let us know by emailing podcast@curzon.com. Would love to hear your thoughts. If it's your first time listening to the podcast, you can subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, Acast, wherever you get your pods. Whilst you're there, if you could leave us a review or a comment, that would be absolutely wonderful. In the meantime, you can follow Sam on Twitter.
@SamHowlett_1.
Kelly, you're over there at?
KS_Powell.
Ayana?
Ayana Murray.
And I'm at Jake H. Cunningham. Thank you so much for listening. Farewell.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.